Translation and Purpose by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Insurmountable eternal time imperceptibly overcomes those who are too much attached to family affairs and are always engrossed in their thoughts. Purport. Quite interesting purport. Fasten your seatbelts. I am now happy. I have everything in order. My bank balance is quite enough. I can now give my children enough estate. I am now successful. The poor beggar sannyasis depend on God. But they come to beg from me. Therefore, I am more than the Supreme God. These are some of the thoughts which engross the insanely attached householders. The insanely attached householder who is blind to the passing of eternal time. Our duration of life is measured, and no one is able to enhance it even by a second against the scheduled time ordained by the Supreme Will. Such valuable time, especially for the human being, should be cautiously spent, because even a second passed away imperceptibly cannot be replaced, even in exchange for thousands of golden coins amassed by hard labor. Every second of human life is meant for making an ultimate solution to the problems of life, that is, repetition of birth and death, and revolving in a cycle of 8,400,000 different species of life. The material body, which is subject to birth and death, disease and old age, is the cause of all sufferings of the living being. Otherwise, the living being is eternal. He is never born, nor does he ever die. Foolish persons forget this problem. They do not know at all how to solve the problems of life, but become engrossed in temporary family affairs, not knowing that eternal time is passing away imperceptibly, and that the measured duration of life is diminished every second without any solution to the big problem, namely repetition of birth and death, disease and old age. This is called illusion. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Shri Shri Sidram Lakshmanarma Shri Shri Gonitai Ki Jai. But such illusion cannot work on one who is awake in the devotional service of the Lord. Yudhishthir Maharaj and his brothers, the Pandavas, were all engaged in the service of the Lord, Shri Krishna, and they had very little attraction for the illusory happiness of this material world. As we have discussed previously, Maharaj Yudhishthir was fixed in the service of the Lord Mukunda, the Lord who can award salvation. And therefore he had no attraction even for such comforts of life as are available in the kingdom of heaven. Because even the happiness obtained on the planet Brahmaloka is also temporary and illusory. Because the living being is eternal, he can be happy only in the eternal abode of the kingdom of God, Parabrahma, from which no one returns to this region of repeated birth and death, disease and old age. Therefore, any comfort of life or any material happiness which does not warrant an eternal life is but illusion for the eternal living being. One who understands this factually is learned, and such a learned person can sacrifice any amount of material happiness to achieve the desired goal known as Brahma Sukham or absolute happiness. Real transcendentalists are hungry for this happiness, and as a hungry man cannot be made happy by all comforts of life, minus foodstuffs. So the man hungry for eternal absolute happiness cannot be satisfied by any amount of material happiness. Therefore, the instruction described in this verse cannot be applied to Maharaj Yudhishthira or his brothers and mother. It was meant for persons like Dhritarashtra, for whom Vidura came especially to impart lessons. evam griheshu saktanam pramattanam tadihaya atyakramat avigyata kala paramadustaraha. Insurmountable eternal time imperceptibly overcomes those who are too much attached to family affairs and are always engrossed in their thoughts. Another heavy kind of preaching from Shukadev Goswami. Naishtik Brahmachari, condemning material life. And Srila Prabhupada happily follows the same suit, giving even more heavy purport. And it's very interesting that in the purport, Srila Prabhupada basically contrasts the two mentalities or two positions, and one is position of devotees and the other position is position of materialistic people. And it is very much similar to what chapter 16 of Bhagavad Gita is describing, divine and demonic natures. And because by contrast, we can always understand better what is what and who is who. If we think about it, that the basic difference, the most important thing which distinguishes divine person from demoniac person or materialist from devotee, is materialist is very proud, whereas devotee is very humble. And so the first part of the purport, because it is dedicated, you know, because mostly the verse is speaking about materialistic people who are too much attached to mundane family life. And there are actually quite a few verses in Bhagavatam in this regard, right? Very, very similar verses. These kind of reminders. You know, it's like you watch the movie and then some kind of advertisement comes. So in the same way, you read Bhagavatam and then some advertisement comes. Don't be attached to material life. Think of Krishna. So, a very famous verse in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam to that degree, to that effect, is Ayur. I call it Ayurvedic verse because it starts with the word Ayur. Ayur harati vaipumsam udyanasto chayanasam tasyarta yatkshano nita uttama shloka martaya. That every sunrise and every sunset is decreasing the life of everyone in this world, except those who are absorbed in hearing the message of the Supreme Lord. So we're really lucky in here, right? Because we're absorbed in hearing the message of the Supreme Lord. And so time has no influence upon us. And so, of course, you need to be absorbed properly, because sometimes you see devotees nodding regularly on the Bhagavatam class, because they are fully absorbed in samadhi. They can't even perceive what's happening. So we're not talking about this kind of absorption, but real absorption. And so by this real absorption, even the time factor will have no influence upon the devotees. But first, it's quite kind of revealing what Srila Prabhupada says in the purport. He really is hitting the nail on the head. He says that, you know, well, I mean, if you remember what Krishna is saying in regards to demoniac people, how demoniac people think. You know, 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is really graphic. And so in great details, it describes even the mentality of demoniac people, what to speak of their qualities. I mean, their qualities are very few. And all these qualities are basically around the same, you know, they are around the same one base quality, is just variation of the same quality, which is basically pride, right? Darpo, damobhimanascha, krodha parushamavacha. Pride and violence, that's it. This is demoniac people. Proud and violent. as opposed to devotees who are very humble and very compassionate. And so, yeah, he goes in great length describing the mentality of demoniac people. Why? Why he's giving so much time and attention to that? Because, well, material world is the world for demons, right? And so it is very relevant for everyone who lives in the material world. And Krishna says how demons think. Ishwaraham, aham bhogi, siddoham balavansuki, right? So the very first thing demon is thinking, Ishwaraham, I am God. Very simple, you know. Who are you? I am God. Aham bhogi, why? Because I am enjoying. Siddoham, I am perfect. Everything is perfect in my life. Balavan, I'm very powerful. And Suki, I'm happy. And, you know, when you read the beginning of this purport, it's very much similar to this description, right? I am now happy. I have everything in order. My bank balance is quite enough. I can now give my children enough estate. I am now successful. The poor beggars and sannyasis depend on God, but they come to beg from me. Therefore, I am more than the Supreme God. Well, there is some kind of logic to that, right? If sannyasi is depending on God, but he comes to me for donations, that means I am God, right? Because he depends on me, so who am I, God? Right? Very easy to come to this conclusion if you don't know the philosophy. And so that's why Prabhupada said it's really important to read my books. And yeah, in Russia, devotees came up with one joke that one devotee wants to marry one young lady. She is practicing Krishna consciousness, but her father is a very wealthy man and completely materialistic, doesn't care anything about anything spiritual. And so, in order to get married, you have to, you know, kind of establish some relationship with parents first, right? And so then he goes to the father and talks to him. And then after that, he leaves. And then wife of this man, she is asking him, so how did you find this, you know, spiritual guy? And the man says, well, he's actually all right, quite reasonable. The only thing I could not figure out, why he was calling me Krishna all the time. And she said, what happened? And he said, you know, when I was asking him these, I think, important questions, you know, how are you planning to take care of your family? He would say, Krishna will look after me. Who will provide you with money? Krishna will give everything we need. So I couldn't figure out why he was calling me Krishna all the time. Like that. So. Yeah, this is very typical mentality, right? Because this is why we come to this material world in the first place, right? That's why Mayavad philosophy is so close to everyone's heart. I mean, you don't even need to learn much Mayavad philosophy. it comes naturally, right? Because that's the dream we were born with, to become gods. And so that's why I heard Chopati devotees were joking that some people say, I didn't believe in God until I realized that I am the one. So now I firmly believe in God. You know, that God which I see in the mirror. Right? So, and some people are serious about it. I mean, it's as strange as it sounds, they think they are gods. And we might not even imagine it until we come across these kind of things. I remember when I was quite young, in terms of my years of being in the movement, maybe 4 or 5 years. And then it was either first or second visit to Vrindavan. And one elderly man approached me, and he had some young man kind of with him, probably some servant or disciple or assistant, whoever. And he kind of smiled, looking at me, and he said, oh, you're brahmachari. I said, yeah. So you are studying Bhagavad Gita? I said, yeah, I do. So have you realized already that you are Krishna? I was like, why should I realize that? And he said, well, because this is what we need to understand, that we're all Krishnas. I was shocked. I said, so you believe you are Krishna? He said, yeah, of course I am. I was like, wow. You know, looks like genuine sadhu and everything. Came to be Mayavadi. So I got so disturbed. I said, so if you are Krishna, you know, first Krishna's expansion, Mahavishnu, in this world, and from each and every pore on his body, universes come. So what is coming from your body? Have you ever considered that? And I think I even told him, you know, because I was so angry, I said, only stool and urine come from your body. No universes come from your body, and you still think you are Krishna? So he was not there. He didn't argue with me, so he just left. And that was in the bank, because I came there to do some foreign exchange. And the guy behind the counter said, how do you talk like that to the elderly man? I looked at him, I said, are you supporting the same philosophy? He said, no, I'm okay. So like that. So it's unbelievable, but some people, they are really convinced about it. Despite of so much evidence, it's like, I'm still God. One of my friends, he is originally from Russia, well, Ukraine, but now he's doing services in Nepal as regional secretary. Patri Prabhu, quite well-known devotee and preacher. And so he had one episode during the civil war in Nepal. And, you know, when war is going on, all kinds of criminal people take advantage of that. And so there was one guy who was a really powerful criminal, and he had a big gang. And so he came to the temple, and he said, because temple is in my area, the area of my control, you have to pay me, you know, a certain amount of money, which was a huge amount. And, you know, he said, I'm not sure, I don't think we'll be able to pay you that much, because we don't have that much anyway. But then he said, if you don't pay me, the same thing will happen to your temple what we've done to the Buddhist stupa nearby, which was blown up. He said, we'll blow up your temple as well. And he was like really powerful. He had a big gang, and he also was a black belt karate champion, this guy. And so he left, and all the devotees were like thinking what to do. But then they didn't have money anyway, so the only option was to really pray. And so Patrick Prabhu said that that he gave them like maybe 2 or 3 days to come up with the money, and then he was supposed to come back to collect. And all day and night he was praying to Nrisingadev deity for protection. And then, you know, on the assigned time, this man didn't show up. And then next day he didn't show up, so they were wondering what happened to him. And then they found out that actually, just before he was supposed to come to them, he had some dental problem, and he went to the dentist. And dentist was drilling his tooth, and suddenly the drill, you know, touched the nerve. And apparently he had, you know, some heart problem and, you know, some thromb in the heart. And so basically he had a heart failure and died in the dentist chair. So Nrisingadev is very expert. So like that. But I mean, this man was considering himself to be invincible, right? That he could do anything, and this is my area I'm controlling, but then, you know, like, touch on the nerve killed him. So, which obviously he never expected to happen, but this is it, that I think it's Prabhupada who says that these guys, they, you know, materialistic guys, they never want to bow down to the Supreme Lord. But they have to bow down, yeah. That one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, why do I have to bow down so much? Well, because Hare Krishna movement, it's like you keep bowing down all the time, right? you lose count, so how many bowing down you do. And one Prabhupada disciple was a little bit, you know, like puzzled by that. Why do we have to bow down so much? And Prabhupada said, well, you still have to bow down. You bow down to old age. You've noticed how old people, they go down automatically, right? It says that the sign of real old age, that you take off your shoes, and then you look at the floor thinking, maybe I could do something else in the area, right? Before coming up. So you have to bow down to old age, you have to bow down to disease, and ultimately you have to bow down to death, right? That those guys who think, I never bow down to anyone. But when the death comes, it's like full dandavat, right? There is no escape. And so, therefore, devotees are smart. They think, okay, let me bow down to Krishna now. And I won't have to be forced to bow down. You know, it's like, basically, our system is very simple. Surrender or die. If you don't surrender to Krishna, you will die. But if you surrender to Krishna, well, you'll have life, right? I think sometime we were mentioning life stands for 4 things. One is love, Krishna's love. We might not have so much love for Krishna yet, but definitely Krishna loves us. And so there are so many, you know, evidences, right? How many of you can see the evidences that Krishna really loves me? Yeah. And immortality? Yeah. For devotees, there is no death. Leaving the body means devotees start their real life of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. And F stands for freedom. Devotees enjoy so much freedom. Freedom from bad habits, freedom from bad association, freedom to travel. Well, now it's restricted. But in general, there is a lot of freedom devotees have. And E stands for enlightenment, right? Real knowledge. And so, definitely devotees have life, right? And materialists, because they don't surrender, they choose death. And so this is called delusion, that it's kind of they live as if they are not planning to die at all, and they die as if they never lived, right? Because they leave no legacy behind, nothing valuable. Their life is like animals' life. They only live for their own sake. And so, yeah, therefore, this kind of life is really condemned in Shastra. Selfish life, full of pride and, self-centeredness. Actually, if we focused on ourselves, like in the electric system, what happens if the electricity is not passing? It's shortcut, right? So self-centered life, egotistic life means, shortcutting ourselves. And yeah, because our life is meant for service. And we can actually see that the whole situation at the moment is a result of this kind of selfish and greedy lifestyle. Like the other day, Buddha Bhavana Prabhu was mentioning that for materialistic people, it's hard to see the correlation between meat eating and coronavirus. Actually, yeah, I spoke to him. I said it's not very difficult to see the correlation because the scientists, they say that coronavirus was brought by the bats. And why bats are living so close to humans now? Because their natural habitat, which is the forest, was cut down. So they became homeless. So they came to live with humans, so they gave humans the virus, right? But why such a rampant deforestation is happening on the planet? Is it for food? No. In order to have enough food for ourselves, we just need our backyard, right? That's quite enough to grow food for our survival. But if somebody wants to eat meat for animal agriculture, yes, huge masses of land are required. So for that sake, they deforest huge areas. So it's like correlation is so obvious. You don't have to be, scientist or anything. But scientists, they support. They say the same thing, that basically coronavirus happened because of people's greed and pride. And, yeah, which mostly manifests in desire for meat eating. And it's really amazing how Srila Prabhupada was saying that meat eaters can never understand God. And I had a very interesting conversation with one man who became kind of interested in Krishna consciousness in Israel. And he's of Russian origin, so he's doing quite successful business. And one devotee lady, he got him interested, primarily by prasadam, giving him prasadam, and then she's encouraged him to become vegetarian. And then he came to the temple, asking more questions. We gave him japa beads, etc. And then he was sharing that she tried to make me a vegetarian, but he said, I couldn't become vegetarian. And I was asking him why, what was the difficulty? And then Because, you know, if you are so much attached to meat products, there are a lot of fake meat products nowadays in the market, right? And they look and taste very much like meat, right? But these are vegetarian alternatives. He said no, that, yeah, it looks like meat, it tastes like meat, but these vegetarian, you know, alternatives, they don't give the same effect which meat gives. Because real meat makes one aggressive. And I need to be aggressive to get ahead of my competitors in my business. So therefore, I cannot afford, you know, because if I become vegetarian, you know, I might lose my business. So, very amazing. And this is why people so much attach to meat eating. It's not even physical attachment, it's psychological attachment. Because they want to be aggressive, they want to feel like gods. You know, like one guy joked that the reason, you know, I came all the way up to the top of the food chain not to become vegetarian, right? Of course, Chinese are following this philosophy very nicely. That's why the whole pandemic started with China. But this is the thing, and it's very interesting, that meat eating is like the foundation for entire materialistic civilization, right? You remove that foundation, then everyone will become purified at a certain point. And so, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gopalananda Sitaram Lakshmananma Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. Every time this opening and closing of the curtains is happening, it's easy to remember one of the Queen Kunti's prayers, wherein she says that Krishna is like an actor behind the curtain of the illusory energy. So we are, you know, the curtains of illusory energy are open. Now we can have the Lord's darshan. So, yeah. And actually we are, because we are associated with this world, and it's very interesting because the whole world is in trouble. We're also kind of in trouble, right? Not too much yet. But it's very interesting what the researchers say, that they say this virus is very vicious, and it's very different from any other pandemic the world went through, because it mutates every single time they try to, you know, control it, they try to eliminate it, it mutates. And mutated virus is not, you know, basically that's why, I mean, there was a swine flu 10 years back, about 10 years back, a little bit more. And in 4 days, they discovered the medicine for it. In 4 days. This coronavirus, they struggle for months. The whole world, you know, is trying to get remedy. They can't get anything for this particular reason, because every time it mutates. And so what the specialists say, that basically even the social distancing is not a solution. It can only slow down the pandemic, just to ease the, you know, hospitals, you know, not to overload the hospitals. But pretty much every single one is meant to get coronavirus. And so we might be wondering, you know, what is that? These materialistic people, they kind of, you know, get this reaction for their meat eating, and all their sinful activities, but what do we have to do with it? How can we get protected? And there is another very interesting evidence, very clear evidence. It's not kind of religious evidence of any sort. It's very, you know, very solid scientific evidence that there is only one thing which makes the difference between, you know, whether you will die from it or you will have that without even noticing it. Because they say some people, they have coronavirus, but it hardly shows any symptoms. They just get over it as if nothing happens, right? Especially children. And the reason is strong immune system. Now, basically, this is the whole difference. If your immune system is strong, you don't have to worry about it. But if your immune system is weak, then it can be big trouble. And then there is also like quite a few scientific researches which show the correlation between happiness and strong immune system. Have you noticed that happy people hardly get affected by the troubles, right? Anyone notice that? Yeah. And so, yeah, that's why Prabhupada said we need to be happy in Krishna consciousness. And so, yeah, let's meditate on what makes us happy in Krishna consciousness. Like, I love kirtans, but especially the kirtans which carry this element of sankirtan, congregational chanting. If you noticed, I love every devotee to take part in chanting, because I've noticed that when devotees take part, they become more enthused. And when devotees become more enthused, kirtan becomes real kirtan, right? And so, in the same way, I'm sure all of us have something we really enjoy in Krishna consciousness. And so it's really important for us to make sure that we are happy in our Krishna consciousness right now. And that's like a question of survival. Basically, today you either happy in Krishna consciousness or you're dead. This is as simple as that. And so, yeah, and because even in Krishna consciousness, unfortunate as it is, one might get affected by this kind of mentality which has been described by Srila Prabhupada in the beginning of the purport, right? Oh, I'm very successful and I've achieved everything, etc., etc., etc. So this pride creeps in imperceptibly. And I think this is the biggest challenge for us as practicing devotees. And that's why it's really important to do something to become free from pride. And it's very interesting, because as we've mentioned, devotee means humble and materialist means proud. And it's amazing to see how great acharyas like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur, they always describe themselves speak about themselves in kind of, what do you call it, derogatory terms. And it's really surprising. I mean, considering this song, just one song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Amara Jivana, like the whole song is really shocking. Let me read the translation. I am an impious sinner and have caused others great anxiety and trouble. I have never hesitated to perform sinful acts for my own enjoyment, devoid of all compassion. Concerned only with my own selfish interests, I am remorseful seeing others happy. I am a perpetual liar, and the misery of others is a source of great pleasure for me. The material desires within the core of my heart are unlimited, and I am wrathful, devoted to false pride and arrogance, intoxicated by vanity, and bewildered by worldly affairs. Envy and egotism are the ornaments I wear. Ruined by laziness and sleep, I resist all pious deeds. Yet I am very active and enthusiastic to perform wicked acts. For worldly fame and reputation, I engage in the practice of deceitfulness. Thus, I am destroyed by my own greed, and I am always lustful. A vile, wicked man such as this, rejected by godly people, is a constant offender. I am such a person, devoid of all good works, forever inclined towards evil, worn out and basted by various miseries. Now in old age, deprived of all means of success, humbled and poor, Bhaktivinoda submits this tale of grief at the feet of the Supreme Lord. So that's pretty heavy, right? And so we might think, how come that such a great personality as Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks about himself in such a way? But this is the thing, when you focused on Krishna and his associates and their service, naturally, in comparison to them, you will feel like that. But if you focused on the material world, naturally, you can always find someone who is worse than you and feel, you know, that I am God, right? And so, yeah. And if we think about it carefully, we can find reasons to think like that about ourselves as well. I was thinking for myself, amara jivana sadapa perata nahiko punyera lesha, that my life is always dedicated to sinful activities and there is nothing good. So sinful activities are of different types. And for example, you know, the worst sinful activity you can imagine is to kill, right? And what I'm doing? I'm a perpetual murderer. On every step, I'm killing so many living entities. Every breath, I'm killing so many living entities. And it's like I'm using this hand sanitizer, which means I'm killing so many living entities. So I'm a professional murderer. Parere udviga diachi jekato diachi jivere klesha, that I always gave a lot of trouble. I'm always giving a lot of trouble to people. Like, for example, Gopinath, Prashant. I'm giving them so much trouble. They already have so much services, but then they have to look after me also. They have to serve me. You know, they have so much services, they couldn't even stay all the way through to the class. And Prashant, I mean, poor man, he's driving me here and there as if he has nothing better to do in life. And the only reason he is peaceful because he is Prashant, right? Nothing can ever disturb him. Otherwise, you know, if somebody else would be in his place, he would say, you know, get lost. How much should I drive you? Like that. So there are many, many reasons we could find faults with ourselves, because there are. But it Then also a question is that how we do not become depressed if we only think about our faults, right? Because normally in material life, when people think about their, you know, good sides, they become very happy. But if they think about their shortcomings, they become depressed. But Bhagavatam shows us the example of that also, because how can we be happy by seeing our shortcomings? And that is very much exemplified in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, wherein Lord Shiva was bewildered by Mohini Murti. And in the end of all, when he was exposed to all his followers, you know, all the sages, they were thinking, oh my God, you know, it's like we worshipped him as perfect brahmachari and then he's lusting after women. But then he said, I'm so happy and proud to have such a master who defeated even me. And so our mentality should be that we have so many faults, and we are so imperfect. But Krishna is so perfect that he can engage in his service even someone as imperfect as me. So Krishna is amazing, right? He doesn't care about my imperfections. And by engaging in his devotional service, I become purified of all my imperfections. So, but it's really important for us to be happy in Krishna consciousness. All right. I think we went a little bit over time. I don't know if there are any questions, comments.